to Deuteronomy chapter 5, verses 1 through 6, and then verse 16. And Moses summoned all Israel and said to them, "Hear, O Israel, the statutes and the rules that I speak in your hearing today, and you shall learn them and be careful to do them. The Lord our God made a covenant with us in Horeb. Not with our fathers did the Lord make this covenant, but with us, who are all of us here alive today. The Lord spoke with you face to face at the mountain out of the midst of the fire, while I stood between the Lord and you at that time, to declare to you the word of the Lord. For you were afraid because of the fire, and you did not go up into the mountain. He said, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. Honor your father and your mother, as the Lord your God commanded you, that your days may be long, and that it may go well with you in the land that the Lord your God is giving you." This is God's word to us this morning. You can be seated. Well, it's good to be here in the presence of God this morning with you. Not because of this place, but because of the people that have gathered here. God has promised to be among us. So it's good to be here. We're looking at these Ten Commandments. We come to the fifth commandment. Now, traditionally, pastors and theologians have taught that the Ten Commandments are split into two parts, sometimes called the two tables of the law or the two tablets of the law. And the first part is the first four commandments about how we ought to love God. And the second part is the commandments 5 through 10 about how we ought to love one another. So when we come to the fifth commandment, we come to a turning point in the Ten Commandments. You remember the first four commandments? If you've been here, you shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make any carved image or graven image in order to worship it. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, and remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. And today, the fifth commandment, honor your father and your mother, as the Lord your God commanded you, that your days may be long and that it may go well with you in the land that your God is giving you. In other words, that you may live long and prosper. I just had to work that in somewhere. Live long, long. Okay, you got it. I was going to do that later. I figured I better just get out of my system now so we can actually continue into the sermon. So here we go. We are looking at this commandment about honoring your father and your mother. And we've just heard that the second half of the Ten Commandments are all about loving your neighbor as yourself. And our parents are some of our closest neighbors. And that's part of why this commandment is here. Now, when I woke up this morning, the sermon had a certain order, as it almost always does by Sunday morning, right? You hope. But by the time I got out of my study this morning, the sermon had flipped orders. We're going to go backwards from what I had planned, because what we're going to talk about this morning first is how you can keep this commandment, how that's possible. We were going to save that to the end, but I thought you might get so disheartened that you might not make it to the end. So how to keep it is what we're going to start with. Then we're going to look at why it's commanded, and then we'll look at what it actually means, what it looks like to keep it. So how, why it's so good, and then what it means. Now, before we dive into that, I want to remind us of the context of the law, the context of the Ten Commandments that we've been working with throughout this series. And so most of us, when we think about the Ten Commandments, we tend to think about it as, here's what you must do if you want to get a good deal from God. Right? It's kind of, here's the rules of engagement, and if you want to get anything from God, if you need to barter with God for something in your life, here's the 10 things that you should try to keep so that you can get that. That tends to be how we think of the Ten Commandments. But remember, we're saying that that is the opposite of how the Ten Commandments come in the story of the Bible. They come from grace. The Ten Commandments come from grace. God has already chosen his people. He already loves his people. He's already saved them out of Egypt. And then he gives them the Ten Commandments. He loves his people. Why? Because he loves them. He loves them because he made a promise to love them, not in anything that's in them. So he has given his grace to his people. And now he says, here's how to live. This is my will for your life. They point to glory. A lot of times we think about the Ten Commandments, we think that they point to a kind of moralistic, dreary, legalistic life. But it couldn't be further from the truth. The Ten Commandments point to heaven on earth. They point to a perfect society that we're all dreaming of and desiring. So they point to glory, but they are powerless to make us obey them. We can't obey them just by hearing them. When we hear the Ten Commandments, we want to break the Ten Commandments. And that's human nature. But God has done something about that. He sent His only Son, Jesus Christ, to die in our place, to live the life of obedience that we should have lived, to die the death that we deserved, so that in Christ we can be reconciled to God, adopted into His family, and given a new heart. And that heart can begin to keep the Ten Commandments. So they come from grace, they point to glory, they can't change our hearts, but God has done something in Jesus to change our hearts. They're not primarily then about restrictions, but about freedom. So the fifth commandment, how does that fit into this? If the Ten Commandments are a summary of God's law as they are, then it might be interesting to you that the fifth commandment even makes the list. Like, why is this top 10? It seems almost mundane. Honor your father and mother. How small. The other ones we can maybe get our heads around. Yes, God is the only God. I see why He would command us to worship Him alone. Don't kill. I can see why the Lord would command not killing. But honor your father and mother could almost seem petty. So why is this even in here? And I think, as we'll see, that without this commandment, unless we keep this commandment, all of society breaks down. And if you're thinking, I think you've said that about the other four commandments, you're right. That's true. But it's true with this one as well. Without this commandment, society breaks down. If parents are not honored, people will not be honored, and society will not have honor in it. We'll say more about that. But without this commandment, societies don't flourish, they decay, and the Lord wants for His people abundant life flourishing. So the fifth commandment is important because without it, society breaks down. It's also important because without it, the Lord Himself will not be honored, as we'll also see. But it is also a difficult commandment. It's maybe the most personally difficult commandment for some of us here. Because when we think about honoring our father and our mother, that cuts close to home. That's right where we live. That's the day in and day out stuff. Don't kill seems much easier. Honor your father and mother. But what if they've hurt me? What if they're dishonorable? What if there's a lot of pain there? This is one of the most difficult commandments personally and emotionally, I think. And that's why we're going to start with how it's possible. And then we'll talk about why it's so good. And then we'll talk about what it looks like. So first, how it's possible. How can we keep this commandment? How can we honor our father and mother, especially if we hate our parents? Maybe we wouldn't say that we hate our parents, but we do. Maybe we feel like our parents are our enemy. Maybe we're just distant from them. Maybe we don't want to have anything to do with them. Maybe we don't respect them. They've made mistakes. They've hurt us badly. So, good news is I'm not here to tell you to get over it. I'm here to talk to you about how it's possible to start moving forward as one who's on this same journey. Now, how is it possible? 2,000 years ago, in what was one of the most incredible events in all of history, God took on a belly button. The eternal God, Spirit, sovereign over all creation, whose Spirit hovered over the waters at creation, who has made everything, who rules everything, kings are in His hand. The sands of time flow through His fingers. He controls when kingdoms rise, when kingdoms fall. That God was born of a virgin, and took on a belly button. And if a belly button doesn't say dependent, then I don't know what does, right? He became the great independent God, became dependent on Mary, in a sense. And he took on, as he took on the belly button, he took on a father and a mother, an earthly father, stepfather, and a mother, Joseph and Mary. And in the one story that we have from Jesus' youth, he and his family were in Jerusalem. He was 12 years old, and they were there for the feast of the Passover. And they left without him. It was something like Home Alone. They left without him. They forgot him there in Jerusalem. They thought he was with the other parent. And he's still there in Jerusalem. They get a ways toward home, and they're looking around, looking for him, and they say, you know, where is Jesus? Where's he at? And so they say, oh, shoot, he's not here. So they go back, and they find Jesus in the temple, debating, talking with the professional theologians of the day, right? And they're all talking together, and Jesus is asking these questions, and they're astonished at Jesus' questions and at his answers. What an incredible theologian at 12 years old is already schooling the professionals, right? And so he's there in Jerusalem, and his mom comes, they find him, and his mom says, son, why have you treated us so? This is Luke chapter 2, verse 48. Why have you treated us so? Behold, your father and I have been searching for you in great distress. And he said to them, why were you looking for me? Did you not know that I must be in my father's house? And they did not understand the saying that he spoke to them. And he went with them and came to Nazareth, and hear this, and was submissive to them. And his mother treasured up all these things in her heart. So again, the God incarnate, the hypostatic union, fully God and fully man, God in the flesh, submitted to sinners as a child. He submitted to his mother and his father. He honored them. He even honored them in the questioning about why he was there when he was saying, well, of course I'm here serving my father, my ultimate father. And I don't think that sounded probably as accusatory as it sounds in the English translation. He honors them, not because they're better than him, but because they're his parents that the Lord has given him. So Jesus Christ, who knew more and was morally superior to his parents, nevertheless honored his parents as a child, and he honored them as an adult as well. When he was on the cross, apparently his father, Joseph, had died, and so he's on the cross dying, and the apostle John is there with Jesus' mom. And part of what it means to honor, as we'll see, is to provide for, to care for. And Jesus, in that moment, knowing he's not going to be able to take care of his mom in his old age, says to his mom, woman, behold your son. And he says to John, son, John, behold your mother. In other words, you take care of her. So he honored his mom, he provided for her, even there on the cross. And of course, Jesus honored his true father, God himself. He said so. He said, I honor my father in John chapter 8. And the proof that the father was honored is that Jesus was raised from the dead. So Jesus perfectly honored his parents. He honored Joseph. He honored Mary. He honored God, his father. He kept the fifth commandment. And the good news and the way that it's possible is that he kept it in the place of people who break the fifth commandment, who don't want to keep the fifth commandment. He kept it in our place, the place of people who have broken it, who are breaking it, and who will break it. That's called grace. And you know what Jesus was rewarded with? A long and prosperous life. Right, the commandment came true in Jesus. He was risen from the dead, and he's given eternity, a resurrection body, to live forever with God. And so the promise that makes the keeping of the fifth commandment possible is this. Everyone who believes in Jesus is forgiven of all of their sins. His blood has washed away our sin. Anybody who simply trusts Jesus for forgiveness is cleansed of all sin, of all guilt, of all dishonoring of our father and mother because Jesus honored his father and mother. And we are forgiven of our law-breaking, and we're adopted into his family, and God becomes our father through Jesus. And it happens not because of anything we've done, not because of how good kids we've been to our parents, but because of what God has done and how great of a child Jesus was to his parents. Jesus died the death that we deserve, but gave us credit for the life he lived. That's how you become a Christian. And the good news is then that only those who have broken the fifth commandment can receive salvation. You see how that works? So, because in a few minutes we're going to talk about what it means to keep the fifth commandment, and we're going to realize that everyone has broken it. But only those who have broken it can come in. Because everyone has broken it. And you got to admit it to receive Christ's grace, to receive the adoption that comes from the Father. And then because we're adopted, because we come into God's family, then we can obey and honor and provide for our parents for God's sake. Because of Jesus, honor doesn't have to be earned by our parents. It can be given freely by us. Jesus gave himself and gave his honor up for us. And when we receive that, then we can start to keep the fifth commandment. And when we start to keep the fifth commandment, we start to bring what will be into what is. We start to bring heaven to earth. So that's part of the beauty of honoring our father and mother. And the challenge then is, how do we do that? By faith, the grace of Christ. And if a parent wrongs us, as every parent has, we say to ourselves, remember grace, remember Christ. I have a new father, not because I earned a new father, but because Jesus has given me a new father. And now I can honor my own parents, can start to begin to do that. Well, it's not simple by any means, but hopefully we can get a better idea of the rest as we go through this. Let's talk now about why the commandment is so good. If that's how we do it, if we do it by trusting Jesus and believing him and receiving his grace, why is this commandment so good for us and for the world? Let me give you three reasons. Two reasons from the New Testament and one reason from the commandment here itself. Why the commandment is so good, why we are to keep the commandment. Now, this commandment was serious. As we saw with the Sabbath commandment, this commandment is, in the Old Testament, it's punishable by death if it's broken. Exodus 21:17 says, "Whoever curses his father or his mother shall be put to death." So why is it so serious? It's so serious because it's so good. And why is it so good? The first reason, from Romans 13, verse 1. In Romans 13, verses 1 and 2, Paul is talking about governing authorities, and he gives the principle about why Christians are to obey governing authorities, and he says the principle is this: there is no authority except those that have been appointed by God. In other words, the first reason that it's good to honor parents is because God made them our parents, and God is good. So we are called then to honor God, and one of the ways we do that is by honoring our parents, because God has given us our parents. Paul goes on and says in Romans 13, verse 2, "Therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed." And keep in mind that when he wrote that, the emperor that he was talking about in Rome was incredibly hostile to Christians, that it was illegal to be a Christian. You were able to be in prison for being a Christian. And Paul is saying, whoever resists those authorities resists what God has appointed. And so the principle applies to parents as well. Whoever resists the authorities of their parents resists what God has appointed. And what he's appointed is good. So we're to honor our parents because God appointed them for us. And to dishonor them is to dishonor God. Second reason, as it says later in Romans 13, we actually owe our fathers and mothers honor. We actually owe it to them. This is humbling for me. It might be humbling for you to think that we owe them anything, especially if you've been hurt. But I'll ask you again to consider your belly button. They gave life to you, at the very least. They brought you into the world. For most of us, they did so much more than that, right? They changed diapers. A lot of your parents, you know the sacrifices that go into having a child. Dealing with all kinds of disgusting, spending all kinds of money, worrying about many different things, sacrificing much to care for your children. And so our parents have done the same for us, and we actually owe them. And Paul says as much in Romans 13:7. He says, give to all what is owed them. And then he lists a few different things, and the last thing he says is honor to whom honor is owed. And so we owe our parents honor. They cared for us, they changed our diapers, and so one day it will be right for us to change their diapers. That would be one way to think about it. That's the second reason. So first reason, they're our parents because God gave them to us as our parents, therefore it's good to honor them. Second reason, we owe them, and so it's good to honor them. Third reason, right here in the text of the fifth commandment, there's a promise. There's a reward that's promised for honoring parents, that your days may be long and that it may go well with you in the land the Lord your God is giving you. So where parents are honored, people tend to live longer and have better lives. Where parents are honored, people tend to live longer and have better lives. Now, remember we've been saying throughout the Ten Commandments that they point to glory. They point to the society that should be but isn't. Martin Luther, one of the Protestant reformers, asked this question while he was reflecting on the Fifth Commandment. He said, he wrote this in the 1500s, but see if this applies today. Why do you think is the world now so full of unfaithfulness, shame, misery, and murder? I mean, does that sound like what pops up in your web browser today, 2016? Here's his answer. It is because everyone wishes to be his own master, free of all authority, care nothing for anyone, and do whatever he pleases. When parents are not honored, he's saying, and when every other authority is not honored, society breaks down. In our community group, we're reading a book that's a memoir of a Christian NGO worker, and a non-governmental organization. He was providing aid. He was in Somaliland, in the early 90s, which was horrible. He describes it as hell on earth. It's something like Syria today, or indeed, I was looking at the news again this morning, and front page of the New York Times this morning, conflict in Somaliland. So, still, Somaliland today, war and murder are everywhere. There's no rule of law. Parents are afraid to let their children go out to play because there's mines that they could get tripped up on and lose a limb or worse. And here's what he says. There's no food. There's hospitals that have been bombed out. Here's why he says that is. He says, I wondered how people could be so callous. When I expressed my frustration, one of my national staff recited a Somali saying that he'd heard all his life. Sadly, it explained a lot. And here's the Somali saying. I and Somaliland against the world. I and my clan against Somaliland. I and my family against my clan. And hear this, I and my brother against my family, and I against my brother. Now, if that's the rule you live by, Somaliland is what you get. And what is that except an antithesis of the fifth commandment? It's the opposite of the fifth commandment. It's satanic. It's horrifying. And that's why it's a little bit surprising, maybe, unless you're considering this, that in Romans 1 and in 2 Timothy 3, the Apostle Paul lists disobedience to parents in these lists of what we would think are just horrible sins. For example, I'll just read 2 Timothy 3. He says, "Understand this, that in the last days there will come times of difficulty, for people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, heartless, unappeasable, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not loving good, treacherous, reckless, swollen with conceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having the appearance of godliness but denying its power. Avoid such people." So if you've ever wondered why is disobedience to parents in that list of all those horrible things, this is why. Because without honoring our father and our mother, society goes to anarchy or tyranny. The commandment comes with a promise of long, healthy life, which implies that the breaking of the commandment will result in a life that is solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. Right? So we live in a society that teaches us not so much to dishonor our father and mother, but not really to honor them. To see ourselves as self-made and equal in every way. This commandment goes against that. It goes against all of that kind of independence. It goes against all anarchy. And it also goes against tyranny. And that's why I say that this commandment really is like a healing balm to brokenness in society. If we won't honor our parents, then who will we honor, right? That's why it's so convicting. If we complain about society but don't honor our parents, our father and our mother, then the commandment's saying we don't have a leg to stand on, because society and health of society starts with the honoring of your father and your mother. So convicted by this. Let's look at what it means then. If that's why it's so good because God gave us our parents, and so it's good to honor them. It's good because we owe our parents. It's good because really, without it, society breaks down and turmoil ensues. Then what does it look like for us to do this? If we do this in the power of the grace of the gospel, what does it look like? What does the fifth commandment mean when it says honor? What's the word honor mean? The word is kaved, or actually chaved, the more the better, chaved is how it's pronounced. And it's used in various ways. It means weightiness or heaviness. When it comes to parents, if you search the Bible, the pastor and theologian John Calvin noticed that in the scriptures, there's three kinds of honor, three kinds of chaved that you see in the Bible, and those are reverence, obedience, and gratitude. So what does it mean to honor? Let's start with reverence. To honor means to revere. Leviticus 19, verse 3 says this, "Every one of you shall revere his father and mother. I am the Lord your God." So what does that mean? What does it mean to revere something? Think about a family heirloom. Do you have an heirloom in your house of some kind? Maybe you're wearing it on your finger. Maybe you have a great-grandmother's wedding band or gemstone. Or maybe somewhere in your house there's a flag that's folded into a triangle and in a glass case that was on your grandfather's casket who died in the war. Maybe you have some kind of family heirloom. And if you have something like that, then you know a few things about what it means to revere. One is you don't really revere the item for what it is in itself. So the gold of you know, grandma's wedding band is not so much what's important to you. That can be bought. You can replace that. But the fact that it was grandma's is what's important to you. Same thing with the flag. You can get a flag anywhere. But this particular flag is revered. It's set aside as special because of whose it was. And so, like a family heirloom, we're called to revere our parents, our father and our mother. We're called to pay them special regard, again, not because of anything in themselves, not because they're such wonderful people necessarily, although that would be wonderful if they are, right? As parents, we should try to be honorable. But we honor them, we revere them because God has given them to us. Maybe there's a teacher in your life or a mentor that you revere, that you hold in high esteem. That's something of what it's like to honor a parent. We show a kind of reverence when we go to a job interview. And you go to a job interview, you dress a certain way, you act a certain way. You don't always dress or act that way a year later in the job. There's a certain kind of reverence in the job interview because you know this person is a superior and I would like them to be my superior. I would like this job. So reverence, that's another way to think about reverence. Maybe another illustration is from the book of Judges. There's an angel who comes to a man named Manoah, and he tells Manoah some good news that's going to happen to his son. And Manoah says, what's your name so that everybody can honor you? In other words, so that they can revere you, so that you can be known and thought high of in this community. Well, the angel doesn't give his name, but that's another story, Judges chapter 3. People who are honored are revered, they're reverenced. That's part of what it means to honor our parents, to set them apart in that kind of way, which I think includes a willingness to be corrected by them. Because if there's somebody that you look up to, that you revere, you're going to be eager for them to teach you the right way in whatever field they're in. So reverence is one kind of honoring, or one part of honoring, you might say. Another is obedience. Obedience. If you're a chemist and the world's greatest chemist comes into your lab, you're going to obey them. You're going to do what they ask. Even if it's, please go get me a cup of coffee, you're probably going to obey that. Certainly if they say something like, please do your experiment this way, it'll go better for you, you will obey them. So to honor someone is to obey them. In the Bible, when it comes to honoring parents, we see this especially in Ephesians 6, where we read before, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. See the same thing in Colossians 3:20, children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. So children, what it means to honor your parents is to obey them, to do what they say. Now there's one exception, all right? So children, if you're wondering, when do I not have to obey my parents, here's the one exception. If your parents ever command you to do something that goes against what God has commanded, don't do that. Because you've got to honor your Father in heaven before you honor your parents. But in everything else, honoring your Father in heaven looks like honoring your parents. So children, the application is obey your parents. Do what they say. And when we talk about obedience, we are talking about obeying the first time without complaining and obeying from the heart, which is really important because I know sometimes, kids, you feel like you don't want to do what they say, right? You ever feel that way? You ever feel like, I really don't want to do that? I have felt that way, but that's not the kind of obedience. We're not saying you have to feel like it. We're saying honoring them means doing it and doing it politely and quickly, okay? So for children, that's what obedience looks like in honoring the parents. But what about children who are now adults? What about adult children? Do they have to obey their parents? Do they have to do everything their parents say? The Bible, I think, is very clear about this. The answer is no, at least not in the same way. In Genesis 2, it talks about how we leave our father and mother. And so there's a sense in which when you become an adult, your parents do not have the power of command over you from the Lord, if you will. So if you're an adult and your parents tell you to do something, you don't have to do that in the same way. But probably what it does look like is that you would defer to them generally, that you would try to do what they ask you to do, that you would submit yourself to their wishes and put up with their quirks and preferences, right? This is what obedience, I think, would look like as an adult child. It does not mean allowing your parents to manipulate you or guilt you into something. Sometimes older parents can try that on adult children. And the way to honor them in those kind of situations would be to resist the guilt politely and say, no, I love you, but no, we're not going to do that. I can't do that. It's not best for my family, whatever the situation is. So obedience for adult children certainly looks different than obedience for young children. Reverence, obedience, and then gratitude or gratefulness is a third kind of honoring that we see in the Bible related to parents. And specifically, the main category here is gratitude in the form of financial support. Financial support. Many times in the Bible, the word for honor is used in the context of financial support. Proverbs 3, verse 9 says, honor the Lord with your wealth. 1 Timothy 5, 17 says, let the elders who rule well be considered worthy of double honor. And in the context, that's talking about payment for them. Even today, we use words like honorarium. If somebody gets an honorarium, they're given what? Money. Financial support. Or you go to the restaurant and there's that little line on the bill for gratuity. Right? So gratefulness and financial support go together in our language. They go together in the language of the Bible. And so this aspect of honoring parents, I think, applies especially to adult children. Jesus' own words shows us this. In Jesus' day, there was a custom that adult children were to support their parents financially. And everybody knew this. It's what everyone did. There were some religious teachers called Pharisees who created a loophole to avoid that responsibility, where you could get out of that responsibility. And Jesus very firmly dealt with them about that. And I want to show that to you. It's in Matthew 15, Jesus says, or this is what happens. The Pharisees and scribes come to Jesus from Jerusalem and they say, why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders? They don't wash their hands before they eat. Jesus answered them, why do you break the commandment of God for the sake of your tradition? For God commanded, honor your father and your mother, and whoever reviles father or mother must surely die. But you say, if anyone tells his father or his mother what you would have gained from me is given to God, in other words, I'm giving this to the temple, so I don't have to give it to you, I'm giving it to God, so it's not yours anymore, he need not honor his father. So for the sake of your tradition, you have made void the word of God. Jesus says, you hypocrites, well did Isaiah prophesy of you when he said, this people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. So Jesus is saying that the commandment to honor our parents includes financially supporting them. And there's no loophole, religious loophole, of getting out of that. It includes financial support by financially caring for them, particularly in their old age. Again, we owe it to them. God has given them to us as our parents, and it's good for society when we do so. Now, does this mean that we can't put our parents in nursing homes or assisted living centers? I don't think it means that, but it means that we wouldn't completely give them up into nursing homes, never visit them, never support them. Even in those ways. I think Christians can use those things as tools to continue to care for their parents. So gratitude looks like financial support. Honor looks like financial support for older parents. But gratitude and gratefulness, of course, show up before that in being kind to our parents and caring for them and going out of our way to help them. So honoring includes reverence, obedience, and gratitude. That's what it looks like. But now, if that's what honor means, what does your father and your mother mean? What does your father and your mother mean? Obviously, your dad and your mom. But typically, as Americans, as modern-day Westerners, that's kind of where it would stop for us. Father and mother means dad and mom. But if you look through the Bible, those terms are broader than you might think. So now I want to show a little bit, this will help you see why I'm saying that this commandment really undergirds all of a healthy society. Because honor your father and mother means honor everyone to whom honor is due. Everyone who's our superior in any way. Not superior like in worth, because we're all equal in worth before God, but superior in station. Here's some examples from the Bible. In the book of Genesis, near the end, when Joseph is talking to his brothers, they had sold him into slavery, and he's explaining how he came into power as Pharaoh's right-hand man. And he says to them, it was not you who sent me here, but God. God has made me a father to Pharaoh. So an administrator, or someone who's superior in wisdom, or in prophecy, as was the case with Joseph, is a father who's to be honored. In the book of Judges, when Deborah becomes ruler and protector of Israel, she sings a song, and one of the lines in Judges verse 5 is, the villagers ceased in Israel, they ceased to be until I rose. I arose, I, Deborah, arose as a, what? mother in Israel. So a ruler and a military leader can be called a mother or a father, of course. Isaiah 49, 23, kings shall be your foster fathers and their queens your nursing mothers. 2 Kings 5, 13, there's a group of servants who say to their master, my father, it is a great word. They address their master as their father. So bosses are, in a sense, fathers and mothers to us in the way the Bible uses the word. When the prophet Elijah gets taken up into heaven and his protege is there, Elisha, he cries out and he says, my father, my father. So religious leaders, you could say, mentors, prophets, are fathers or mothers. King David in Psalm 34 calls his subjects children. The writer of Proverbs, who's a giver of wisdom, calls his reader my son. We see the same thing in the New Testament. The Apostle Paul says that he became the Corinthians' father in the faith, and he often calls his disciples children. So father and mother can mean dad and mom, and that's their first meaning and primary meaning, but it means much more than that as well. It includes rulers and spiritual leaders. It even includes older generations in general. 1 Timothy 5:1, do not rebuke an older man, but encourage him as you would a father. Leviticus 19:32, you shall stand up before the gray head and honor the face of an old man, and you shall fear the Lord your God. I am the Lord. So there's an honor. When we honor our father and mother, we're saying that we're honoring our dad and mom first and primarily, but also showing honor, meaning reverence and gratitude and obedience to bosses, religious leaders, government leaders. And so now you start to see how this commandment is so countercultural. Just so countercultural that we're called to honor all of these different kind of people in this way. This honoring extends to all authorities. Because the human race is essentially a family. And society and the church are just extended families. So we're to honor everyone who's a father and mother to us. It requires honoring all superiors. Romans 13, 7, pay to all the honor that's due them. So how is this possible? It's possible because of the grace of Christ. It's not possible to honor on the basis of the moral character of our superiors. It's not possible, at least, to unconditionally honor on that basis, right? Because our parents sin, and our bosses make poor decisions, and they don't lead well. And our government leaders frustrate, perhaps enrage us as Christians. But by grace, we have been saved and been brought into the family of God. And now we are people who can begin to honor those to whom honor is due, not because of anything in them, but simply because God in his goodness and his providence has set them over us for this time. For reasons maybe we can't even understand, but we can show honor. And why is it so good? Well, it's so good for the healing of all of society. Can you just imagine a society where people are honored as they ought to be honored? Did you know it's easier for a boss to make right decisions when the boss is honored, even when he makes wrong decisions? Same with the parent. God is in charge of the moral character of our bosses and religious leaders and government leaders and even our mom and dad. But he calls us to honor them because he's so good. Because God is so good and has brought us in, and he's healing society through us honoring one another. And it starts at home with mom and dad. And it looks like reverence and obedience and gratitude to all earthly authorities. So may it be so among us. May the God who has made us, who has put us where we are in life, empower us by his grace to honor those to whom honor is due. Let's pray for that help now.